Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and SJS for this Wednesday. Great to have you with us. Neil Coulon from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com is going to join us today. Looking forward to hearing from Neil. Now, when you go to the Lou Brown School of Philosophy, gentlemen, today you've won one game. If you win tomorrow, that's called a winning streak.
It has happened before.
Lou Brown, from tire salesman to Indians manager, and now sports philosopher.
I got a guy on the other line with a set of white walls.
Lou, how would you like to manage the Indians?
That's all right.
I don't know.
I got a guy on the other line where white walls. That's great. I love. There are some really, really good parts of that movie, and that's one of those movies that I have to watch every spring training.
My kind of team, Charlie. My kind of team. I mean, who are these guys? I mean, this guy's dead.
Cross
him off the list, then. Then cross him off the list. Well, today, Neil Coulon is going to talk about the Steelers' two-game winning streak and some hope. You know, some hope for the Steelers after they beat the Ravens in a salvaging moment for you. You feel the season's now a success because you get no worse than the split with Baltimore.
That's exactly right. It doesn't matter what goes on from here. I am still not of the mindset that this is a playoff football team, but we're not going to get swept by the Ravens.
Your ability to lowball expectations, brilliant.
I'm just saying, I'm not expecting a whole lot this season. Just not going to get swept by the Ravens.
You sat down, you watched tape with your son last night?
Yes.
Do kids know how to have some fun?
Well, sure, you know, all the time. That's actually kind of fun right there, and then... At that point, all his homework was done, so he went up and played on his iPod the rest of the night.
Okay, now you say it's fun.
Right.
Does he say it's fun?
Well, he thinks it's fun as long because it only lasts about a half an hour. See, the way they do it now, they have it. It's not like you have to sit there and watch through the stoppages like when you and I watched film years ago. And literally it was film. Now you're only watching the play. So it goes from one play, plays over, stop, goes to the next play, plays over, stop. You get the whole game in about 30 minutes.
Now, let's revisit your statement.
Which one?
When you said, it's fun because it's only a half an hour.
Right. Well, I understand that he's just gone through 2 hours of football practice.
Okay. And Deb wants to watch tape with him.
Yeah, it probably is more, you know, that I want to. I mean, if I said to him, hey, do you want to watch tape today? It's up to you. He'd probably say, nah, I think I'll pass. That's probably true.
My point exactly. Time now for Inside Penn State Athletics, courtesy of Learfield Sports.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River. Rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Lost in seven games to the Marlins in 97. All right. Okay, let's move forward.
We were talking about Major League, and that song always runs in my head from the beginning of the movie. Great Randy Newman song, by the way.
I got a feeling we're about to turn it around. Gentlemen, we won yesterday. We win today, that's two in a row. We win tomorrow, that's a winning streak. That's called a winning streak. yes. We're gonna
love this British stuff.
yeah, it's exactly right.
I may move to England.
Neil Riddell is going to join us on the show today. Great to have Neil on. Mike Wolf, Big Ten Network. Okay, so we got some things coming up today. Looking forward to it very much. More on, of course, the World Series starts tonight. I think the key to the World Series may come down to something simple like pitch count. The Cardinals have two outstanding starters in the young Michael Wacha, who will pitch game two. He's been nearly untouchable so far. And Adam Wainwright, who's an outstanding one. The Cardinals have also been fortunate. They've faced two teams that have no concept of pitch count. The Pirates, as I've talked about repeatedly all season, what's the, you know, offensively, what's the biggest weakness in their game that I've talked about over and over again? On base percentage. Hey, that's because they're up and they're swinging at the first, second, third pitches and whatever, bang, bang, bang. I mean, please. You know, I mean, they have the plate, they have the plate discipline of a T-ball team. So then you get the Dodgers, and they're just wailing away or whatever, okay? So
my question, though, is the Cardinals...
Okay, I'm not done yet.
Sorry.
Okay,
sorry.
Now it's... No, I'm sorry, because, I mean, you know, you barely knew the Cardinals were in. okay, but my point is that the Pirates and Cardinals, the Pirates, Cardinals, Dodgers, Cardinals... How many pitches per game do you think the Cardinals pitching staff throw on the average?
110.
130 pitches a game. Okay? 130 pitches a game for Cardinals pitchers. What is the Red Sox MO? Take the pitch count and drive it skyward however you can do it. Run counts deep. Foul pitches off. Okay? If the Red Sox are in that 130 range with this team, the Cardinals will win this series. There is no question in my mind. But the Red Sox, on the flip side of this, against the Rays and then against the Tigers, and the Tigers have outstanding starters. They have better starters than the Cardinals do. Okay? Averaged 157 pitches forced per game. The key to this series is going to be whether or not those extra 20 to 30 pitches take place in the game. If the Cardinals can keep it in the 125 to 135 range, they got them. This thing gets to 150, 160 pitches, where the Red Sox are now attacking the underbelly of the bullpen. They win the series. Okay? The ability to drive or not drive the pitch count, I think, is going to be the key as to how this plays out.
Let me ask you, how confident, if you're a Cardinals fan, are you in the back end of the Cardinals rotation? 1-2 games, 5-6, I think you're feeling pretty good.
Sure you are, because it's Wainwright and Wacha.
Right, but 3-4-7, I think, have you really, really make you nervous.
Well, it depends, you know, on the other side. I think Peavy had a really good game 4 against Tampa Bay. He did not have a good game 4 against Detroit. That was the one game that the Red Sox were out of. And Buchholz had a great season, got hurt, came back, has been good since he came back, but not great since he came back. The difference is Tozawa's really good in the 7th and 8th inning. Breslow's really good 7th and 8th inning. Yohara's been great. I mean, if the Red Sox can get 6 innings out of their starter, preferably 7, they'll win. I mean, bottom line, but the pitch count part is the part I'm going to be looking at. Okay? 130 pitches a game for the Cardinals, while the Red Sox forced 157 pitches a game. Now, I realize this has been the hot conversation in every sports talk show in America. Oh, wait, now somebody pointed out to me, nobody's talked about it.
Actually, everybody's starting to talk about that game we were talking about yesterday, where the lawsuit's pending.
Well, the lawsuit, you talk about the...
The bullying.
That got cleared.
No, but that's what everybody was talking about earlier today, is the bullying discussion.
Oh, you know what? You know what? I mean, that kind of parent drives me up the wall, okay? To me, the press should go find who that parent is who filed it, and they should do a story on what's this deal? I mean, why should the coach who kept his starters in for 21 plays, who put his second and third team in, who agreed with a running clock in the second half and the whole thing, who has not been indicted at all by the other coach except praised, okay? Look, let the coaches coach. You sit in the stands, all right? Cheer. That's your job.
Hey, let me ask you something or point something out.
I'm getting a little irritated with, I'm going to charge him with bullying. Will you grow up?
I agree.
Grow up.
You don't need to get a trophy just for participating anymore. I'm sorry. Some games aren't going to end well. And you know what? I think you learn just as much from the blowouts as you do the games you win.
You know what, Kevin? I never received a single trophy playing basketball, ever. In Little League, I think we got two. All right.
I don't remember football or baseball.
Well, no, that's because we won the championship.
Yeah, see, I wasn't on a winning team, so I don't know.
Well, some teams I have were lousy, and some were good, okay? And in football, we were 4-5-1 1 year. My junior year, my senior year, we were 6-3. Got nothing for it. I got a letter in the end, okay? But guess what? I had a blast. I had a great time. Okay? I mean, if I got a trophy for just like being a participant, I'd throw it out. I'd have thrown it out. I don't want this.
You showed up. Here's your medal.
I mean, but I wouldn't want it.
No, I agree with you.
I would not want to be like, what do you mean? We all got trophies for what? I mean, we all know what the score is and the whole thing. You know, it's the Little League team that we won and we got this little trophy, which was really neat. I was the same team Peter King of Sports Illustrated. We're on the same team together.
Right. I remember you saying that.
All right. Then I got one in Senior League ball. Okay, fine. But that's... I just loved playing. I loved being on a team. I wasn't the best player. You know, I mean, some years I only got a couple three hits. Some years I got 10 to 20 hits, you know. I mean, but I had a blast riding my bike to go play and then playing and practicing and then riding my bike home. I mean...
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2011 Ford Explorer Limited, like new, low miles, and Ford certified pre-owned, just $34,995. Clean Carfax and fully serviced 2005 Chevrolet Colorado 11,487. This 2011 Ford F-150 XLT is one tough truck, but at a friendly price, $24,494. 2011 Dodge Nitro Heat. He'll be the second owner, just $17,995. And a gas-sipping 2012 Ford Focus with lots of remaining warranty, $12,495. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I did have to laugh the other day at something that the president gave out an 800 number.
Right.
To call for about insurance.
Yeah.
in order to bypass the website.
Yep.
Do you know what the what they tell you on the phone call?
Please hold. We can't. There's too many calls.
No, they direct you to the website.
Oops.
I mean, really.
Your wait time is 3 days.
Four high school kids in the basement at Shikellamy could come up with a better system. Are we really into technology? I mean, really. All right. if you can't laugh at life, what do you got?
That's true.
Oh, my goodness. And to your credit, you give me a lot to laugh at.
No, I do what I can.
It's a lot of it's incidental. It's, you know. But, those two teams you found out in Texas are in the same conference. They have to play each other.
They do have to play each other, yes.
Okay. So they're of similar size. It's a shame only one only has 30 kids out for it. But, I mean, the parent files a bullying charge. The coach isn't complaining. Hey, do you know who the single most embarrassed kid in that school district is right now? The kid of the parent who filed the complaint.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can see that.
Sitting like, your mom did what? Your parents did what? Really? They just kind of beat the heck out of us, didn't they? Yeah, they did. Yeah. Well, maybe at the end of the year she can go buy him a ribbon. All right.
I do not support that idea.
But see, I'm just not big on that stuff.
No, I don't either. I think if you win it, fine. But you shouldn't get something. If you want to give somebody a T-shirt for everybody participating,
yeah,
that's fine.
That's fine, yeah. You know, hey, thanks for being a part of it and so forth.
But, I mean, I've gone to many, many youth wrestling tournaments over the years. And there have been a lot of medals for participating. And they're nice. It's nice to have. But I'll tell you right now, ones that mean a lot are the ones where it was first, second, or third, or fourth even, in a big tournament. And those are the ones that meant something to him. And those are the ones he has hanging on his wall. The other ones are aside.
You know, I think there is some warped sense about kids' feelings being hurt or something like that. Where I don't think some adults get it. I know when I was a kid, all right, if they gave me a participation whatever, I'd have thrown it out. I don't want that. I wouldn't even want it. Hey, if they gave me something because I placed first, second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever, okay, that's different. You feel like there's a sense of accomplishment. There's no accomplishment. Hey, I showed up. Hey, great. I'd have tossed that thing in the garbage in 15 seconds.
You know, we talked about when I was coaching youth football the last several years. Now, this year I didn't, but I coached a lot of 8-, 9-, and 10-year-olds who you would think would be very bothered by not winning a game. And I'll tell you what, we didn't win many games over those few years, but it was almost to the point for a lot of parents, including sometimes the coaching staff, 3 seconds after the game was over, they didn't even remember the game.
Right.
Now, there's a little bit of that's a little annoying when you're trying to prove a point in a post-game discussion. They got over it rather quickly. We just lost 42-3. Yeah. Hey, where are we going for food?
Yeah. Well, exactly. The kids get over it faster than the parents do. It's unreal. But I'll say this, 90%+ of parents get it. 90%+ of parents, they get it. They think the participation thing is a bunch of baloney, the whole thing. They praise their kids, which, you know, even in defeat, they still praise it, which is great. It's that 5-10% where you just sit there and say, look, don't live your life for your kids. At 5-10%, 90%, they get it. They're cool. They're fine. They understand what the deal is. You know, you're around these people all the time. I'm telling you, 90%+ flat out get it. They know. They're smart.
But this is what I said yesterday. What did they expect Tim Buchanan, the coach, to do? Tell his kids to go out there, okay, when we get the ball, we're going to kneel down four times and give them the ball. That's worse.
That's worse.
That is worse. That's insulting then.
That's worse. We're going to take it. we're going to take a knee. You're not good enough.
Right, right. That's insulting because we're going to take a knee and then we're just going to give you the ball at the 5-yard line and say, hey, try and score us. No, I even if I'm down 91 to nothing, I want an opportunity to try and stop you. I want an opportunity to try and score on a legitimate set of a legitimate play. That touchdown that you give me sure. isn't going to mean squat to me
sure.
as a player.
Right. All right. Neil Riddell, Altoona Mirror, joins us. And Neil, welcome. Great to have you back, bud.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks. Appreciate it very much. And the interesting in this series, I think to me, what makes a rivalry is not playing every year. To me, a rivalry is when both teams have a chance at each other every year. And you look at this one, the road teams won 5 games. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, truly. I agree. It's not really a rivalry until the other guy wins. And then it becomes one. And I don't know, and we've visited this topic before, I don't know that Penn State will ever have a rivalry like it had with Pitt, but I think
agreed.
This is the biggest thing on the schedule that is a rivalry to the Penn State fans because of the geographic, the success of both schools, Big 33 and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, it helps, though, in the Penn State-Pitt thing where if for each one it was the biggest rival. This one, of course, we know that Michigan is Ohio State's biggest rival, and I mean, and everybody knows it. It's no secret.
Yeah, but I just think that's where we are, and where it has gone since Penn State joined the Big Ten. There've been a whole lot of really positive aspects to the Big Ten, and you know, one thing I'd chime in, Steve. I was not at the opening of the Pagula Arena, and I saw you were there, and I thought that was neat that you were part of the broadcast crew. But I think when you take away football and you say, what are the 10 greatest moments in Penn State sports history, I'd say that would get some consideration to having been one, the opening of that arena and all that it means. And going on a tangent of what the Big Ten has meant, what the Big Ten Network has meant to Penn State and these other sports, I think has been impressive.
Well, there's another part, too, about the Big Ten Network. And in this era where, you know, as we know what's happened with Penn State, the $60 million fine, bowl money being distributed throughout, bowl share being distributed throughout the conference while the bowl ban's in place, the television money, I think, to my opinion, Neil, has been a saving grace for Penn State through this.
Yeah, and the Big Ten Network, I mean, to be set up with, you know, with a hockey crew and the hockey experts
yeah.
and to go back to the studio and be able to focus on, I mean, it's more than just the same crew doing every sport. And, yeah, I think that's really been special, and I'm sure there's a lot of other conferences that are trying to emulate that. I don't know whether they'll match it. It seems the Big Ten has really had a running start.
Yeah, they have. The SEC is going to start theirs in August of next year, which ESPN, I think, will own and operate. But you know, that's where we are right now in sports. How do you feel, Neil, about the I'll use the word oversaturation because it's the only word I can think of at the moment. But, you know, there is a saturation point with sports. How do you feel about where it is right now?
Well, probably mixed, but it's provided opportunity. And, I mean, I don't know that the media can complain about it just in the sense that I think it's made the media, you know, probably more relevant. I mean, how many times do you have to see something across a crawl of ESPN? I mean, if you watch one game, you've seen it 18 times in an evening, and then it's repeated all morning long. I have mixed emotions because I like to still, you know, get the paper in the morning with the coffee at the kitchen table, and in the spring and the fall and the summer outside on the porch. To me, it's, you know, it's a special thing. You know, it's one of the beauties of life. Now, of course, I'm a newspaper man, so I'm biased. But when you listen to Mike and Mike, which I do religiously, and what they cover from, you know, 20 after 6 to 20 after 7, you know, there's a pretty good chance, other than rotating guests, that they're going to be covering similar topics from 10 till 9 till 10 till 10. So I don't know how much of it, you know, it becomes a point of no return. And then the other thing is everybody that has a talk show, and I'm not criticizing anybody who has one, but when the big topic of the week breaks on a Monday or a Tuesday, and then you hear the ESPN guys that happen to have a weekend show, they feel the need that they have to address it too, even though it's been covered ad nauseum all week long.
Michigan and Penn State, you sat there, you watched that play
Thank
out.
Thank you for getting off that topic.
Yeah, I'm going to go someplace else. That's, see, I can change topics and gears. You know?
There you go.
You sat there, you've watched so many games, Neil. Yeah, I'm not going to ask you to rank them in the whole thing. I mean, after a while, there's, you know. But what did you think watching that play out as a Beaver Stadium moment, but also in the progress of a football team?
Well, I kind of thought it was the best finish that I had ever seen from a home game. You know, you can go and say, and that doesn't mean it's the best win or it was the best game. But I think with the drama of four overtimes, I can only imagine what it must have been like for you to have to broadcast it. I mean, what a thrill. And I'm sure you could probably, you know, we could reverse the interview because it would be more interesting. You know, I just thought it was with the four overtimes and, you know, and I think the backdrop of the, it's not just this game and this year, but it's this whole program and what it's been through and seeking moments like that. You know, you're not going to win a national championship or be allowed to win the Big Ten championship. So you're looking for these signature moments and you got it last year against Wisconsin. You got it here now against Michigan where, these fans are being rewarded, and in a lot of ways, more so than, you know, maybe making a trip to an Outback Bowl game and winning a game there. I just think that that's been the upside, I guess, if you will, to the sanctions, the fact that it's put so much focus on the regular season and to be able to deliver, you know, some of these games at the end with, you know, I kind of wondered whether he was going to go for 2 points right at that moment when they scored on the quarterback sneak. But I think Bill O'Brien made the right decision to keep the crowd in the game because obviously that could have let the air out of the stadium immediately. Well, but they had a lot of momentum, too.
He put up two fingers right away and then backed off.
Yeah.
I mean, so he did consider it. I mean, no question about it. When you look at it, I mean, look, when you talk about those signature moments, Wisconsin last year, Michigan this year, we both know, Neil, the sanctions were designed to inflict a lot of damage. That's the way they're designed. That's not a commentary. That's just what it, you know, that's why they gave sanctions. To see them 12-6 through this, what does that say to you and tell you?
Well, number one, I think they made an excellent choice in Bill O'Brien and somebody who the team has followed his lead in terms of resiliency and being able to absorb these blows that have not been any of his doing and be able to, you know, pick yourself up and move on and keep a team together. And I think he's also a master of modern day football. And then I think people really appreciate that of the quarterback development that you're seeing, not just through McGloin, but now into Hackenberg, you know, a true freshman. Yeah, there are times where it looks like maybe they're asking too much from him. Sure, maybe they should have run the ball. No, maybe about it against Indiana. But you're seeing somebody who I think, you know, can really take the program forward. And once his hands are untied behind his back with the facilities and the tradition Penn State has and the talent that they're assembling. I mean, they're going after high level recruits. I mean, I think there's a lot of real bright spots that you're seeing that once everything, the smoke has cleared, assuming the playing field is still level at that point. You know, I think you're seeing somebody who can really compete at a very high level. I'd be a little discouraged if I was Michigan after that game.
No question. No question about that. Penn State, Ohio State, we talked about the rivalry at the beginning. Ohio State's been the gold standard in the conference. I mean, everyone knows that in the last 10 years or so, maybe 12 years. There have been moments where Penn State's been able to beat them and knock them off the perch, win the conference. What do you think, when you, from the outside looking in, what makes Ohio State what it is?
Well, I mean, they have great history and great tradition. And, I just think that they have done an excellent job over the years. When you look at how good they've been, particularly at home, you had mentioned, I've been fortunate to have seen a lot of games in this series. And I have fond memories of the very first one. I was at the Collegian in 1978 when Penn State had Bruce Clark and Matt Millen. Yeah, we were there, Steve.
I was there.
And the Woody Hayes kept it a secret of who was going to be the starting quarterback, and it turned out to be freshman Arch Sleaster. And that was a pretty tough assignment against that defense. But interestingly, Penn State played better against Ohio State more consistently before it got in the Big Ten than it has since it's gotten in the Big Ten. And I think you talk about the focus that Ohio State has put on this series since Penn State has been a conference brother, and Ohio State has consistently outplayed them more times than not. Mm-hmm. So even when Penn State has had some success out there, like in 08, it really didn't get a lot done offensively. I think, and that's one kind of thing that Tom Bradley can always hang his hat on. He went out there and won, and for everything that he was through, I feel good for him, with the fact that he was able to leave with a win over Penn State as the interim, or Ohio State as the interim coach. I think it'll be interesting to see how open Bill O'Brien plays on. I never got the idea that Penn State went out there with a real wide open style when in Columbus particularly.
Right.
So I think that now, is he going to fake a punt and have the punter throw it? I hope not. But he's going to let it all out.
Well, I mean, that's the interesting part, because Ohio State is the only school that Penn State has played every year in the Big Ten. They're the only one that they played year in and year out that has never left the schedule. And for Ohio State, Michigan and Penn State are the two that have never left their schedule since Penn State.
And I hope that continues to be the case.
Well, being in the same division, it should.
Right.
Being in the same division, it should. And I think that's why, while the divisional setup in the East is tough, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State all together, while you'll have Indiana, obviously, on the move up. Maryland, which has been able to go off to a good start, and Rutgers. I mean, that's a good set of schools, I think, Neil, moving forward, that you're going to have every year.
It is. And I don't see it as insurmountable compared to you still have Nebraska and Wisconsin, in the other division. Iowa is not in its best run now, but I think will improve. And I think clearly this side is a little bit more challenging. But I think if you're Penn State, that's what you've got to aspire to. And if you can beat Ohio State, maybe you'll be one of the chosen four.
How does this need to play out Saturday night?
Well, I was surprised when the national line broke at 14.5. That was a little higher than I expected. I thought it would be closer to 8.5, 9.5, 10. I would say, I don't know that they're vulnerable to the early blowout. I think they're more vulnerable to being worn down defensively. I'm going to try to keep an eye more on that. I think Penn State will do a good job offensively. I just don't know that they're going to be able to hang in there physically for 60 minutes with Ohio State.
Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. As always, it'll be great to see you out there, my friend.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good show.
Appreciate it, Neil. Neil Riddell. A couple things. The Ohio State defense has walked onto the field with a long field almost every time this season.
In seven games, only three opponents, only three drives in seven games by the opponent has started on the Ohio State side of the field. It's an amazing number. An amazing number. And, you know, Neil talked about early and so forth. Very important, I think, in a game like this. Ohio State scored in their initial drive of the game five of seven games this year. Very impressive. 129 points this year in the first quarter. Very impressive. So the early going is going to be important. Plus, we know the big interception has plagued Penn State. In the 11 meetings between Penn State, in the last 11 meetings between Penn State and Ohio State, in six of those 11 games, Ohio State has returned an interception for a touchdown, including last year, Ryan Shazier, who picked off Matt McGloin and ran it back for, what, 20, 25 yards out for a score. Huge moment in that game when it was tied. It was 7-7 in the third quarter when Shazier did that. And I mentioned six of the 11 games that returned an interception for a touchdown. There have been eight touchdowns total. They actually have eight interception returns for a touchdown those 11 games because two of the games out of the six had multiple interceptions run back for a touchdown. So staying away from the big mistake is going to be very important. Second hour of the show coming up. Mike Wolf, Big Ten Network, joins us in the 4 o'clock hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.